Welcome to KBPS on PRP, a show featuring local news, music, and conversations produced by students from AM 1450 KBPS, the Portland Public School radio station. I'm your host, Joe Anderson. You're listening to KBPS on PRP with your FM dial tuned to 99.1. On air since 1923, KBPS is the radio station located at Benson High School. Staffed by students while they learn about the communications and broadcast industry. Streaming 24/7 at www.kbps.am or 1450 on your AM dial, KBPS is the voice of the Portland Public Schools. Portland Radio Project is your nonprofit community radio station, closely tuned into Portland, on the dial at 99.1 FM in the heart of Portland and streaming worldwide from any computer at prp.fm. KBPS on PRP, a new hour-long show featuring KBPS students on Portland Radio Project. Starting us off with our first piece of student content, Chilihoa Susk and Leslie Ann of the KBPS student staff.
I'm Leslie Ann Rivera here with Chilihoa Susk Freelander. We are part of the radio student staff of KBPS. We're talking about the OSA announcement where high school students are now able to make money off their name, image, and likeness. We interviewed students and coaches if they heard and their opinion on the announcement. Here are the interviews.
Leslie Ann, I'm here with
Charity.
And have you heard about the OSAA NIL deal?
Yeah.
How do you feel about it?
I just feel as though student athletes should really be proud of this new rule, because like, if it's not for, if we don't get our names out there by whatever way they trying to do it, how else will we get our names out there? There's a lot of student athletes out here that's really got good potential and like don't nobody know them because like everybody just focus on the most popular people type. So mm-hmm. if we get paid and all that, we gonna be great.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
All right, thank you. I'm Leslie Ann, and I'm here with the girls' basketball coach at Benson.
Dexter Lasour.
And have you heard about the OSAA NIL deal?
Yes, I have.
And how do you feel on the situation?
Honestly, I think it's a great idea. I think kids should be able to make money off their likeliness just because the colleges do the same thing, and they don't pay the players who promote their school or have been highly touted out of high school. So it's only right that they get paid. NCAA has made a lot of money on college students, from video games to jersey sales to whatever they promote at their school for their athletes. So I think it's only right that students are able to make this, get paid as well. So I think it's a great idea. I would tell students to take full advantage of the opportunity and get what you can while you can.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Leslie Ann, and I'm here with
Michaela McNary.
And have you heard about the OSAA NIL deal?
Yes, I had heard about it previously. It is very interesting, especially as a coach and a former high school athlete. But it's definitely something that's like new, exciting, also a little bit confusing. So it's very interesting right now.
And how do you feel on it?
I think that there's a lot of stuff that needs to be taken into consideration when we think about this new NIL rule, NIL deal situation. One of the things that was really interesting to me is that the specific rules that they put in place. So for those of you who don't know, NIL stands for name, image, likeness. So previously, high school athletes and even some college athletes were unable to make money based on any sort of advertisements or anything that used their name, image, or like a cartoon version of themselves, so likeness, which was really unfair at the college level because colleges were making a lot of money off of college athletes and selling their jerseys with their names on the back of them, creating advertisements with those athletes in them, and those athletes saw none of that money. So when that change at the college level happened, I thought that that was a great idea. But the same situation doesn't necessarily apply to high schoolers. High school sports, they're not making money off of the athletes. So it doesn't, some of those things don't make as much sense to me of changing those rules for athletes to monetize their name, image, and likeness. based on the same justification. I don't necessarily think that it's wrong, but I think that the justification should be different for the high school level than for the college level. And I don't know about other adults, but I'm not going to be walking around with like a high schooler's last name on my back. Like, I'm not going to go buy a jersey that says, you know, whoever's name. That's a 17-year-old child. Like, that just seems weird to me. So for the high schoolers themselves, it seems great. But yeah, it's just, it's a lot. And then I'm torn in two different directions, because when I was in high school, I was an athlete, but I also got a modeling contract. And one of the companies that kept, or a couple of the companies that kept wanting to use me in their ads were Nike and Adidas. But if I wanted to be eligible to play my sports, or if I wanted to be able to play sports in college, I was not able to work with those companies because I was doing something athletic and getting paid for it. Now, as long as high school athletes aren't wearing their high school jerseys or OSAA logos, I believe they are able to do things like that, which is great, and it won't interfere with their eligibility in high school or college athletics. But there are only two athletes in Oregon right as of right now who have NIL deals, and one of them is a student from West Lynn, and the other is a female student athlete. And I don't know much about them, but one of the things that stands out to me is that I think that we need to be a little bit more ethical in the way that we pursue NIL deals at the high school level, in terms of who are we trying to benefit the most, and we still need to keep kids at the center of this. And if we have kids who are amazing athletes and might not have the same access to college, if they are relying on their sports to pay for their college, maybe those are the students that we should be looking to create NIL deals for, as opposed to students who regardless would be able to pay for their college based on generational wealth or something else along those lines. If they have those means already, there are plenty of student athletes in the state of Oregon who could greatly benefit from a $5,000 contract with a apparel company who struggle right now to make ends meet or don't know how they're going to pay for college if they don't get a sports scholarship or something else along those lines. And I think that we really need to take that into consideration when kids are getting NIL deals right now and trying to make sure that we do it in a way that benefits the students who really need it and who are putting in so much extra time to developing their skill in their sport that I don't really know where I'm going with that. But basically, when it has to do with children, minors, we need to be way more ethical, or at least keep ethics in mind at the forefront of our mind when we are creating these rules or offering NIL deals to children compared to people who are already adults and are already getting their livelihoods supported in some way. So that was a lot. I'm done talking now.
Okay, unless you have a follow-up question.
Thank you for listening to these interviews and the many opinions on this announcement. I am Chelsea Osfinier, here with Leslie and Rivera, the KVPS student staff. Signing off.
On November 7th, Damian Lillard came back after a calf strain that caused him to miss four games in this season.
The Blazers won against the Miami Heat 110-107. Damian Lillard ended with 19 points, 6 assists, and 3 rebounds.
And the rebound taken by Jeremy Grant, who has 10 of their first 16 points. 10 of their first 18. Lillard knocks in a triple. Damian Lillard, 21 triples this year. Don't foul. 3 seconds left. Lillard for Hart. It counts, and the Blazers Blazers walk off with a 110-107 win on a Josh Hart dagger.
Some Benson students have also been following up with another NBA team, like Brooklyn Nets, and they are interested in the story of Kyrie Irving. Irving had posted on Twitter an anti-Semitic film, and Irving has now been suspended for 5 games, and Nike as well suspended him.
As of now, the Brooklyn Nets gave Irving a list of things he should accomplish before returning back to the team. This includes making a $500,000 donation to anti-hate causes and complete an anti-Semitic training and meet with the ADL and Jewish leaders.
And as well meet with owner Joe Tsai to demonstrate an understanding of the situation.
The Blazers will play against the Brooklyn Nets on November 17th.
Hey, this is Oscar Krimen in Reading, and today we're here with...
My name is Jacob Patterson.
This is actually our radio teacher that we got for this interview today. We're going to be asking him a couple questions about college football. My first question I have is the inevitable game that we're all thinking about, Beavers versus Ducks. It hasn't came up yet. Unbiasedly, who do you think has a better chance of winning?
That is so hard to say, you guys, because obviously the Ducks are looking pretty good right now, but you can't count the Beavers out. They're having a phenomenal season down there in Corvallis. And, you know, I'm always a fan of the underdog, and I think the Beavers are going to come into this with a little bit more of a chip on their shoulder. They have something more that they want to prove. And the Ducks got to be careful not to take them, you know, they got to take them seriously. So honestly, you know, being a Ducks fan, yeah, I want to see the Ducks win, but I won't be surprised that the Beavers get the upset, because I think the equation is prime for a Beavers upset.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that one a little bit. If you look at 2 years ago, Oregon State actually came out on top, won by a field goal, 3 points, and then this last year, Oregon actually won, but only by a touchdown. So if you look at from past history of Oregon normally, you know, blowing out the Beavers, these last couple years, the Beavers have been either won or got closer. So this year could be the same. Do you think this year could probably be the same as?
Absolutely, Redding. Yeah. You know, I don't know off the top of my head. Do you know where this game is going to be played at this year? Is it in Corvallis or in Eugene?
Because I think this year's Eugene.
That's always a big factor in the what used to be known as the Civil War, but I think we don't call it the Civil War anymore.
I think it's just the rivalry game.
The rivalry game. You know, you always got to take a look at where the game is being played, because so for decades and decades, it was that home team that won. You know, if it was in Eugene, the Ducks would win it. If it was in Corvallis, the Beavers would win it.
Yeah.
So that is also a huge factor in what could happen this year.
Mm-hmm.
Got to give a little love to the home team.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. Kind of moving on now to the next topic. The Ducks are in a high playoff position. They are now ranked at 6. You need to be in the top 4, obviously, to make the national championship playoffs. Mm-hmm. But this last week was insane with a lot of upsets. LSU beat Alabama, so Alabama dropped from 6 to 10, I think. Tennessee lost, they were number 1, so they're down to 4. Clemson lost, they were 5, so they're all the way down, they're back down. So now Oregon's up at 6. So the top 5 teams, Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, Tennessee. And TCU. Do you think that Oregon has a chance to get up in that top position to make the playoffs?
You know, as much as I hate to say this, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. We've seen this play out before. Being a lifelong Duck fan, I remember the most recently, the Herbert days, and then before him, the Mariota days. I remember being in Washington, D.C. when the Ducks were playing in the national championship game. And going up against teams like from the SEC, and as good and as fast as Oregon was, it's just a whole different ball game down there in the SEC. Those guys are much bigger, they're better, they're stronger, they're faster. It's like a Daft Punk song. And the reality is as great as Oregon can be and as fast as they can be, and when they're on their game playing their best, they could go up against anybody, but when they're going up against the big boys in the SEC, they always get stomped. And So I hate to say it, but you know, unless Oregon has that size that you can see in the SEC and in the Georgias and the Alabamas and the LSUs, I don't think the Ducks are ever going to win a national championship unless they're on that kind of caliber.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a good point with them not being able to match up against SEC teams, as we've seen in week one. Oregon already went up against Georgia, lost 59-3, I think it was.
Crushed.
Crushed. I mean, obviously, first week jitters, first week new quarterback for them in Bo Nix, who just transferred from Auburn. But like you said, is there really a chance? We really don't know. You never know until you see. But, yeah, I would agree with you that there's not a big window there for them. So.
I don't know if you guys are going to ask this, but one of the things I want to mention is you mentioned Bo Nix.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy is, like, on fire right now. He's got more touchdowns than any player in college football.
I think he's in the Heisman candidates right now, top three.
And this the last game that they played, he threw for a touchdown, he ran for a touchdown, and he caught a touchdown.
Yeah. He's a good athlete.
I would love to see him win the Heisman. I think that would be like the cherry on top for the Ducks this year. Maybe not a national championship, but if they could win a Heisman, I think that would be the big thing to shoot for.
Yeah, and I think he's shown a lot of promise, of course, after the first couple iffy weeks. Losing to Georgia, of course, he had like four interceptions, and then next week he had a couple, but they still won. But like you said, I mean, incredible athlete, player, would be huge for them to win that.
Get those rookie cards next year, gentlemen. Get those rookie cards next year.
Yes.
Well, Jacob, thank you for your time. This has been Oscar in Reading with PRP. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Hello, Portland. My name is James, and this is my friend Josiah. Today, we have a special guest from the Maurice Lucas Foundation, Miss Sheila, the program director. Josiah will start us off with the first question.
Hi, Sheila. What made you decide to join the Maurice Lucas Foundation?
Hi, James and Josiah. It's nice to be here with you today. Thank you for inviting me in. Lots of things made me think about joining the Maurice Lucas Foundation. I'd been in Memphis, Tennessee for about 7 years, an Oregonian by heart, had been here all the rest of my life, had a little stint in Memphis, Tennessee, and worked there at a charter school as a teacher and a program director and a principal. And I really decided when I came back home, I didn't want to work in public schools anymore. I had been a public school teacher here in Oregon for almost 30 years, and I really felt like I wanted to work with an organization, an educational organization, in a different way. So I started looking for nonprofits, educational nonprofits, where I could bring all my educational background and provide opportunities to all students, whatever their situation, in a way that I just didn't feel I could do in the public schools.
So what are your goals at the Maurice Lucas Foundation? Like, you specifically, also, well, the goals of the foundation as well.
Well, thank you, James. We have lots of goals. Let me start by saying that the Maurice Lucas Foundation Academy program begins in middle school with sixth graders, and then we follow those students clear through high school and then even in through post-high. And post-high looks like all sorts of different things. It looks like, you know, vocational school, vocational training. It might look like a two-year college, a four-year college, going right into the workforce or the military. But our goals are really to provide transformational opportunities for students in our program. So our middle school program students, in fact, are just next Wednesday going on a field trip to the University of Oregon. And so we try to get our middle school students on university campuses so they can imagine themselves there. And they can think about what it would be like to go to college and see themselves as a college student. So we get to go to the University of Oregon athletic facilities. We get to sit in on some business classes. We get to talk with a student panel, and we get a tour of the college campus. So our middle school program also consists of character development. We have seven pillars in our program. And so we do a lot of curriculum around those seven pillars. And then we also have academic support and physical activity. So our program in middle school is Monday through Thursday. And then in high school, we follow students whatever high school they go to in the Portland public metropolitan area. And there we provide individual tutoring if a student needs that. We have seminars where students learn about how to write college application essays, how to build a high school resume, so they're really setting themselves up for opportunities for post-high, whatever those might be. We have guest speakers. We have opportunities for parents to learn about the FAFSA program for students who are going to college. I just do check-ins with the students in high school. And then new to our high school curriculum are job shadows. And so we're looking to make sure that all our students have an opportunity to for a day job shadow in a career interest that they might be thinking about.
How long are you planning on being in the foundation?
Well, I'm 60. And I can't imagine retiring yet, although a lot of my friends are already doing that. I think I feel young because I've worked around young people all my life. And I'm excited about what's happening in the Maurice Lucas Foundation. We're looking at expanding within schools and adding new schools all the time. We're looking at going to cities where Maurice Lucas played and trying to have academies in each of those cities. So there's a lot of plans ahead of us, and I'd really like to be involved in all those. So could be a long time.
So what are the benefits of joining the Maurice Lucas Foundation? Like, you know, like if any parents sign their kids up for it?
Mm-hmm. So lots of benefits, opportunities for kids, right? To go to college campuses, to have job shadows. But there's also other opportunities. For example, we often get tickets to the Blazer games. And so we send our families to Blazer games. Last year, I think we got some tickets to a couple concerts. And so it's kind of always on a first-come, first-served basis. But we really, really enjoy the opportunity to provide a family night out. You know, that's really hard nowadays, as expensive as everything is. And we don't always get to be together as a family, whatever that family looks like. So we're excited to be able to provide some of that. Other benefits include scholarships. We have two different scholarship opportunities. One is the Howard Hettinger Memorial Scholarship, and that scholarship is a $5,000 scholarship when students complete our program sixth grade through high school, as long as they have met all the requirements for that. Then they automatically will have $5,000 for their post-high experience. And then there is another scholarship opportunity. It's the Wings Jordan Brand Scholarship. And we are one of, I believe it's six nonprofits in the state of Oregon, 32 in the nation, who have an opportunity for one of our students to earn a GAP scholarship each year. And so what that means is if a student's financial situation is that they are unable to pay any money for college, federal financial aid doesn't come through, any of that, then the Wings scholarship will pick up all of their college education. But let's say a family is able to contribute $20,000 a year, but it's $40,000 a year for a student to go to a particular college, then the Wings scholarship will pick up that gap, which would be that $20,000. So we have one student each year who is able to earn that opportunity.
That actually does kind of tie into one of the questions we have here, which is what are some of the scholarship requirements?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. So consistency in program in middle school, right? Attendance, you know, being there, participating, engaging in all aspects of the program. We all know that middle school years are challenging, right? You know, we like our students to be there and be consistent with their attendance. In high school, our students are required to keep a 3.0 GPA for the scholarship. They're required to do community service. So our ninth graders have to do 10 hours, our 10th graders 20 hours, our 11th graders 30 hours, and our seniors have to do 100 hours. Whoops, 40 hours. Woo, that would be a lot, 100 hours. Woo,
crazy.
40 hours of community service. And then just connecting, right? Staying involved. We like our students to either go back and tutor at the middle school or participate. We have a lot of events that we do, and we love to have our high school kids there participating and giving back during those events.
Well, I do remember from my trips to the basketball games that when people get good grades, they're actually able to sit with the players for a bit.
Ooh. Well, James, I don't know if that still gets to happen, but I'll speak to David Lucas on that one.
Well, yeah, as long as David's there.
Yeah.
I remember Khalil sitting with the players.
Oh, that's very cool. That's very cool. Well, now we have, you know, periodically we have 10 tickets, sometimes 20 tickets to different levels. 200 level and 300 level seating at the games. And so it's really great to be able to send families. Speaking of families, the one other thing I did want to mention is a couple things. One, we are able to provide some family financial assistance. So this happened during COVID, you know, when we had a lot of guardians who were out of work, and you know, it was just sometimes maybe difficult to pay utility bills or transportation issues and concerns. We had some very generous donors who provided some funds for us to be able to give some relief to parents through the Family Financial Assistance Program, and we are continuing that program. And we also brought back basketball camps, so free basketball camps. This last summer, we had two free basketball camps. We did one down in Salem, which was great. I believe it was third graders through 10th graders for that one, for the Salem community. And we had we had 130 students register for that one. And then we did one at Park Rose Middle School, where we do have a program. I believe we had like 75 or 80 students at that one too.
Well, this has been a great interview with Ms. Sheila from the Maurice Lucas Foundation. This is James and Josiah signing off.
If you'd like to support KBPS on PRP, please consider donating to Portland Radio Project. Now through December 31st, PRP is part of Willamette Week Give Guide fundraising campaign, where donors can support their favorite nonprofits and get some awesome incentives in return. Your support of PRP helps programs like KBPS on PRP stay on the air. For more information, go to prp.fm and click the big red heart.
Hello, this is Ariana Maya.
And Oscar Bautista.
And today we are going to be talking about the new Meghan Trainor album. Her new album is called Taking It Back. She just released. So Oscar, from the songs you heard, what do you think about it?
Listen, Ariana, this song reminds me of back the old Meghan Trainor days, 2015. Up bouncy beat, and I really enjoy the melody. Like a throwback to me, Ariana.
I enjoyed the songs because of how she made women more comfortable about their bodies and how they show respect.
The songs are called Don't I Make It Look Easy and Made You Look. Let's listen to them now. Don't I make it look easy?
easy, baby, when I do what I do. Don't I make it look easy, baby, huh? I'm fooling you. I just posted a picture, read all the comments, hardy the good ones, if I'm being honest, I might have spent an hour on it. You won't ever see me cry, 'cause I've got a filter for every single lie. Don't I make it look easy, baby, when I do what I do. Life, happy life, but you don't know I'm up all night. You worry about my body type. I wonder if I'm what they like, but I should just forget it, right?
Just in case your neck break. Ooh, tell me what you gon' do. Ooh. 'Cause I'm about to make a scene, double up that sunscreen. I'm about to turn the heat up, gonna make your glasses steam. Ooh, tell me what you gon' do. Ooh. When I do my the same. This ain't that ordinary. This that 14 karat cake. Ooh, tell me what you gon' do.
Once source said, writing the ups and downs, we are all secretly experiencing moments of bursting confidence to self-doubt and sadness with a sparkle of reassuring reality.
For example, the song, Don't I Make It Look Easy, she talks about processing the truth and showing the best part in herself. When it feels like a straight out lie and not as confident, which is something that a lot of people do on social media when it comes to influencers not actually telling the truth.
Another song that could be said is Made You Look. Megan talks about how not a lot of chubby people out there in the music artistry and how they should be known for who they really are. She also talks about how women should have body positivity to others, not just themselves.
I really like this album and I hope you guys listen to it and enjoy it as well.
Hello everyone, and thank you for listening to the KBPS Hour. My name is Zip. This week, I will be doing Portland music artist Anna Tivel's song called Outsiders on the album Outsiders. Anna Tivel is an American singer-songwriter from Portland, Oregon. She has released 4 studio albums on Portland-based Fluff and Gravy Records. Her 2017 album Small Behavior received positive review and was named a Top 10 Unheard Album of 2017. By Ann Powers of NPR. Outsiders was released on August 19th and has 8 songs. I will be reviewing the first and the most popular song, also called Outsiders, after the album Outsiders. Let's take a listen.
Imagine the very first man on the moon, watching the earth rise out of the darkness, cerulean blue, water. Thunder and dance.
thousands of miles away, the endless expanse of a dream. Pausing the burning of cities to say we are beautiful when we believe.
Outsiders was inspired by Anna Till's viewing of a documentary on the 69 moon landing. And she picked up on the fact that the moment the whole world was unified in its wonder. Reverb adds to the otherworldly impression, while the lyrics are finely crafted and bear repeated listens. Despite the flawed and honest characteristics of Tivel's songs, with their troubling emotions and struggles with mental health, Outsiders is a low-key and quietly optimistic. Masterly crafted and performed, it is Anna Tivel's finest work yet. Certainly not a country album, and not especially rootsy as a folk one. Outsiders nonetheless demands the attention of anyone in search of important songwriting that respects perspectives and soothes worried minds. Thank you all for listening to the KBPS Hour. My name is Zip, and I will hopefully be back next week.
My name is Meriwether Stewart, and you're listening to the KBPS Hour. On Saturday, November 12th, at the Nordia House in Portland, orientation for Nordic Northwest's official Oregon Lucia will begin. Lucia Day, which celebrates the story of St. Lucia, who would bring food assistance to those in need, is an important event in Scandinavian culture. Nordic Northwest aims to share the traditions of many Nordic communities with their events, which include the Lucia Scholarship. Every year, young women with Nordic heritage apply to be on the Lucia Court, a group of young women who will assist with events put on by Nordic Northwest each year. With this comes a scholarship ranging from $1,000 to $2,500, which is provided by Nordic Northwest. You can learn more about Nordic Northwest and their upcoming events at nordicnorthwest.com. This has been Meriwether Stewart, and you are listening to the KBPS Hour. Play that, y'all.
Hello, this is Colby with the KBPS team. I'm here with
Felix.
And recently I've been reading articles about workers' rights and union busting. And as someone who has experienced some very negative parts of multiple different jobs, bad pay, you know, having to work long hours with no water or not cold enough water and heat waves, or simply just having to do hard labor when we really shouldn't be forced to do it, I wanted to go and ask some people's opinions, and Felix here wanted to be interviewed. So Felix, I'm just curious, what are your thoughts on unions? Do you think that unions will make the workplace a better place, or do you think that we need to cut down on unions?
Well, personally, I believe that unions are an important tool. It sucks that we even have to have unions in the first place, considering that, you know, workers should have all these basic human rights and, you know, proper bathroom breaks and resources for, like, the heat wave. I know recently in history we've been learning about the Pinkertons and how they used a lot of violence against union workers.
What are your thoughts on, for example, Amazon and their awful, awful, awful treatment of employees, and how for quite a while now, people have been trying their absolute hardest to unionize, and even in a few places, they have been able to unionize. Do you think that Jeff Bezos should just give in and allow unions, or do you think that what he's doing isn't exactly a bad thing?
I believe that he should listen to his unions. These are his coworkers that are speaking to him, whether they are below him or not. These are workers who deserve to have proper bathroom breaks and should be allowed to say their voice, even if it is unpleasant for Jeff Bezos to hear.
Or what about Starbucks, too? Even Starbucks recently, there has been huge, huge fights over union busting. You even had McDonald's too. Recently, you had a group of people who were fighting for a union. I don't want to necessarily say harassing, but yelling and kind of screaming at the CEO because while they were fighting for workers' rights and having a union, the McDonald's CEO just walks right past him and doesn't even acknowledge them. What do you think that what he did was right, or do you think he should have took the time to talk to his employees and have an actual conversation with them?
I believe that before that incident even happened, there should have been a sit down and a discussion with those workers. I know the fast food industry in general has just always been really difficult, especially service work. And if these employers aren't going to make things any easier for their workers, then, you know, maybe they do get yelled at and maybe they do get these negative responses because they haven't taken the time to actually listen to their workers.
Final question. So I used to work on a farm, and there were countless days in the summer where it was 80 or 90 degrees, even sometimes in the heat wave, and I was forced to work multiple hours out in the sun with, we had water, but it was warm water. My options were either having warm water, drinking a warm Red Bull, or having no water at all. Do you think the government really needs a crackdown on this, on labor like that? Because I wasn't technically legally hired. I was just working there and getting paid to work there. It was more under the table work. Do you think the government needs a crackdown on that?
I believe, yeah. If it's like under table work, I understand that, like, I personally as well need a lot of money. And as a kid who couldn't get that, and a kid that was struggling with poverty, under the table work is actually really important for a lot of, you know, kids. And it's really unfortunate. It shouldn't be this way. But we need to make sure that these kids, even if it's under the table work, are still getting proper treatment for their work conditions. Like, there should be good water conditions. The water should not be warm. That is not going to help you with dehydration. Sure, it's water, but if you're in the heat and drinking warm water, it's not going to cool your body.
All right. Well, thank you, Felix, for coming in and giving your thoughts on unions and workers' rights. I hope everyone has a good day.
Hey, this is Kayvon, and you're listening to KBPS and Portland Radio Project. I hope you enjoyed this interview. Thank you.
Hey, I'm here with
Redding.
I just wanted to pick your brain a little bit about the high school playoffs that are going on for football. Do you have any idea who you think's going to win?
I mean, I bet everybody's saying this, but I'm going to have to go with Westland. They look like probably the most dominant team in the state, for sure. I mean, Central Catholic, they always have a chance. Experienced coaches, pretty experienced players coming in and playing in the last 4 years in the playoffs. Probably going to have to go Westland, though. They're looking good. Shellstad, Mark Hamper, great players. Their quarterback is great. I'm not sure what his name is, but he's a great player as well. Their defense is outstanding. They barely let up any points in that first round victory. Or I don't even think they let up a single point. I think it was 59-0 against Grant. So that right there shows something. And Grant's not a terrible team. They're a good team. So anything could happen, but I'm going to have to say Westland.
Okay, is there any underdogs that, you know, could possibly take down Westland by chance?
Well, yeah, like I said, Central Catholic, they're coming in at 5, so that's a little lower for them. I think, I mean, obviously they're a great team. They've always been a great team. They've won the last couple of years state. But maybe Lake Ridge, I've seen some good things from them, but other than that, it's between Westland or Central, to be honest. Central does play Jesuit, so that's a big game. Both teams that do not like each other very much. Holy war. but, yeah, I mean, Central or Westland, those are my teams. Those are the ones I think. So, yep, thank you.
Okay, well, thank you for coming on and letting me interview you. And this is Kayvon with KBPS and Portland Radio Project.
Hello from beyond the grave. Speaking to you today is me, Mackay from Mackay and Dane's Creation Corner.
Today we'll be talking about all things scary, from haunted houses, the horrifying ordeal of mortality, and monsters that go bump in the night. Specifically, we'll be talking about what makes these things scary, and, well, let's just jump into it. I feel that a specific thing being spooky really hinges on a few different things, but the main three ones that I found are the audience, or the consumer of your media, the tone or vibe of the thing you're trying to create, and the world-building slash characters in your media. But that's not all that helpful, huh? Let's break it down. When I say audience, I mean the people who will be seeing the thing you're making. Why is that important? Well, it's always important to be aware of who you're telling your story to. But it is specifically important in horror because depending on who, well, you're trying to scare, certain things just might not work or might work too effectively. Let's say you're telling a ghost story. If your audience is like beginning teens, young but not too young children, just being a ghost might do pretty well. But if you wanted to really scare them, add themes of change or social issues, and yes, as cheesy as it is, drama, things that they'll actually be scared of. Like, let's say our ghost was just starting high school, new to the area, doesn't really understand the rules, and gets murdered because of it, and now haunts the halls of our high school. Because these things and why the character was murdered connect to the themes of change, of not knowing things, it would scare the audience more. But those are all good examples, or at least I think so. So what are some bad ones? Well, young teens might not connect to the idea of age or that youth and young people are dumb or think themselves invincible, unlike an older audience. Making sure to understand your audience and how they work and how they think is really important in making a story that will affect them in the way that you want, but that's not the only thing that's important. Another thing is tone. Is your story a sad one, angry, funny? I think that depends on, again, the audience, but it also contributes to it. If you're writing for sad 20-somethings who are desperately trying to escape reality, you'd probably want a story that's somewhere between sad, funny, and a little bit mean. You're trying to reflect your audience's emotions into a story. But how does that work for horror? Well, we've already pinned down that we're writing a ghost story. Well, two. One for the older audience and one for the younger. So, let's say that our first story about the high schooler getting murdered is a bit of an angry one. All teenage angst and gory fights and flashbacks, intermingled with a bit of maybe funny or maybe sarcasm. But we don't have to follow the books. Creation is, if anything, a mixture of tropes and ideas. It is making something new and unexpected. You could go with a really sad, dark story, but that might change who would want to watch it. And that's what tone is. It is kind of an emotional signpost for who's going to view your story. And in horror, it adds depth and changes how one feels, how one is scared. Are they crying, sad at the horror of how could the main character just die? How could the villain do that? Shocked and afraid, uncomprehending at the things that they just saw, confused by the suddenness of it, or angry at the stupidity of the characters or the vileness of the monster. That's all up to tone, and... But tone isn't the only thing. Another thing that's really important is your characters and your world that the story is in. One of the fastest ways to bring in people to consume your story is to make it about them, or make the world something they're either familiar with or want to be familiar with. Or, in the case of horror, make it something they can understandably feel. Creating a world and characters that can support your story and writing, as well as the tone and audience you're trying to get into your story, is one of the most important things for creation in general, but especially so in horror and spooky things. Because if the thing you're scared of doesn't make sense within the world, then it can take away from the fear. And if your characters are just limp, empty meatbags that have nothing to do or nothing to tie them to the story or world, what's the point? But fear not, creating good characters and worlds is a bit of a combination of the two previous topics. Let's go back to our ghost stories, yeah? I mentioned that there were a few rules to the high school that our main ghost character didn't know, thus causing their demise? Well, that is an example of world-building, or setting-building in this case. Rules that govern how characters think other characters should act in the setting of a high school, added with the tone of our story, can build up the general feeling of the school, tense, filled with rumors and conflict. But the world and setting of your story can also be a reflection of the characters within it. Let's say that the high school is actually quite calm a few years after the tragedy,
But after our ghost comes by, it starts to change, starts to feel the way it did before. There are so many ways to imbue emotion into things, and that's why horror is really cool. So, in conclusion, I think what makes something scary depends on what emotion you want to play with within the thing, as well as where the story takes place and who or what is affected within the story and setting. But anyhow, that is the end of our segment. This has been Makai and Dane's Creation Corner. Please stay safe out there in these cold days. Avoid graveyard whistling and things that follow behind you. Enjoy the rest of your continued existence, my friends. Makai signing off.
If you'd like to support KBPS on PRP, please consider donating to Portland Radio Project. Now through December 31st, PRP is part of Willamette Week Give Guide fundraising campaign, where donors can support their favorite nonprofits and get some awesome incentives in return. Your support of PRP helps programs like KBPS on PRP stay on the air. For more information, go to prp.fm and click the big red heart.
Hi, my name is Jacob Patterson. I'm the KBPS radio broadcasting teacher, and I'm here with one of our students in the program, Mr. Chilahosask Freelander. And you have this really cool thing going on that you have talked about in our class a couple of times, and you're trying to raise awareness about this. And ultimately, it benefits a really good cause. And I just kind of wanted to talk about it for a minute with you and have you share the information with our listeners. So tell us about this, and I believe it's for the Boy Scouts, a local Boy Scout troop that you're in, and this special kind of holiday fundraiser. Tell us about what you're doing.
So our troop is doing this wreath fundraiser. We do this every year. We contact a local company that makes wreaths by hand, actually. And they're not plastic. They're not, like, cheaply made. They're really good quality stuff. And we've kind of just enjoyed it all together. This money goes into, like, our events, so we can go to summer camps, so we can do more fundraisers. We're the popcorn guys, not the cookie guys. We're the popcorn guys.
And so this holiday wreath fundraiser that you're doing, you have a bunch of different options from wreaths to swags and this even this really cool candy cane piece, and then this really massive cedar garland that's like 25 feet long. Tell us about these different things that you have.
Candy cane is actually one of the more famous ones. A lot of people love the candy canes because they just look cool. They actually cost the same price as the 14-inch wreath because they're about the same size.
And they look really festive and decorative with pine cones and holly berries and the different kind of wreath swag materials. Which one do you have on your door? Or which one are you going to put on your door?
We're going to have the 14-inch wreath and the candy cane.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that listeners should know about this? Or if they're interested in finding you or getting one of these, is there a good website that they should go to? Or how do people find you?
Go in and contact my mother. Her email is mamafox06. That's mamafox06@gmail.
At gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Mama, M-A-M-A, Fox, F-O-X, and then the numbers 06 at gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Chilahosask, thank you so much for sharing this with us. And not only helps people out, it helps them feel good, you know, during mm-hmm. the holiday season, but it helps you out and it helps the troops out, and all the proceeds stay right here in our local community at the local troop there. What is your troop number, by the way? It's
Troop 143, and then 5143 is the girls' troop. My sisters are actually on 5143 right now. That's actually how it started, was because I recruited my sisters who then created the troop.
Chilahosask, thank you so much for sharing this with us.
Yeah, no problem. I'm just glad that it just gets on air and people get to hear about it.
KBPS on PRP, the new student show airing on Portland Radio Project. featuring Benson High School KBPS radio students. On air since 1923, KBPS is the radio station located at Benson High School, staffed by students while they learn about the communications and broadcast industry. Streaming 24/7 at www.kbps.am or 1450 on your AM dial, KBPS is the voice of the Portland Public Schools. Portland Radio Project is your nonprofit community radio station, closely tuned into Portland. On the dial at 99.1 FM in the heart of Portland, and streaming worldwide from any computer at prp.fm. This concludes our show for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Joe Anderson, and this has been an hour with KBPS on PRP.